Thank you very much. Thank you very much also to the organizers for, first of all, organizing this wonderful meeting, and secondly, for inviting me too. And I would like to give a short talk about, the title is up there, about Hardy-Littlewood Solvable Inequalities via Fast Diffusion Flows. And this is joint work with Eric Carlin and José Carrillo. So what it's all about, it's there are three issues here. One is the Hardy-Littlewood Solvable. I will also tell you something about Sharpe-Galliard-Nirenberg, and it will tell you something about fast diffusion flows. And then in number four, I will combine all these four things into one little story, and I hope to be finished within about 20 minutes, okay? So here's the Sharpe-Hardy-Littlewood Solvable inequality. Of course, the inequality has been known for many, many years, but the constant has been figured out by Lieb in 1983. And he also figured out what all the optimizers are. So here, the H is an optimizer. And you have that for any function f with a finite LP norm, here's the p, of course, and the dimension and the lambda have to be related. And when you stick in this H function, then you find the Sharpe constant. And you can calculate the right-hand side in terms of gamma functions, but this is not the main point for the moment, okay? And when you scale this function and you translate it, you find all, up to a constant, all the optimizers, okay? So this is the Sharpe-Hardy-Littlewood-Solvable inequality. The proof actually is fairly non-trivial. Lieb invented along the way all these notions of concentration, compactness, and all these kind of things. So this is it, the first one. And notice, by the way, what is important here. Look, keep in mind the form of the optimizer. It's 1 over 1 plus x squared to some power, okay? Let's keep this in mind. Next, here's another way of writing it. I'm going to restrict myself to the famous case where lambda, remember this was the power in the kernel, x minus y to the power lambda. I'm going to restrict myself to when this lambda is going to be d minus 2. About the other cases, unfortunately, we have not too much to say, and we have some ideas, but let's restrict to this case. Then you can use the fact that this kernel, x minus y to the power minus n plus 2, is nothing but the Green's function for the Laplacian. So we can write f Laplacian minus 1 f in terms of the expression of Hardy-Littlewood-Solvable, right? And therefore, it makes sense to look at this functional, capital F, which is, has here the Sharpe constant. Here is the norm, right? This P norm, which we talked before. And here you subtract the expectation value, so to speak, F inverse Laplacian F. And what Hardy-Littlewood-Solvable, if the Sharpe form says, is that this complicated expression is always greater or equal to zero, no matter what kind of functions you stick in. The CS is the Sharpe constant, okay? So, and again, what is the optimizer? The optimizer is of type 1 over 1 plus x squared to some power, right? And of course, you can take translates of it and you can scale it. So this, by the way, this inequality is a large invariance group. It's in fact a whole conformal group. And that makes it easy in one sense and difficult in the other. Anyway, let me go on to the Sharpe-Galliard-Nirenberg-Solvable inequalities of Delpino-Dolbo. They did this in 2002. Again, the inequality has been known for a long time, but they were able to figure out what the Sharpe form is. It looks a little bit complicated because you have now, instead of only the gradient norm and the 1p norm, you have now three norms, and they have to be related in terms of 2p and p plus 1. Okay? Notice, by the way, this theta up there is an interpolation parameter. Looks pretty complicated, right? What they figured out was, again, that the optimizers are, again of the form 1 over 1 plus x squared to some power. And again, what can you do? You can translate it, and you can scale it, because this inequality scale invariant. Okay? Yeah. So, I think you... So I think it's maybe not necessary that you remember all these things. It's kind of technical, right? You get these infinitely many indices and all this kind of stuff, but you can sort of relate, understand what the statement is, namely that the gradient 2 norm times a certain p plus 1 norm, which is, by the way, the p plus 1 is always less than 2p, That makes it interesting. When you divide this by the 2p norm, that's always bounded below by some fixed constant. And one knows the sharp constant. Let me now review for a moment fast diffusion equations. You take, like a heat equation, the udt equals Laplace mu to the m, but here the m, this number, is a number between 0 and 1, strictly between 0 and 1. You could also use m equals 1, but that's too easy, right? That's the heat equation. Now, this equation up there doesn't have any stationary states, but you can easily convert it into an equation that has stationary states, and that's the usual one. It's this trick which goes from the heat equation to the Fokker-Planck equation, namely, you do a rescaling of this type here, where the beta is, again, a certain constant, which you fudge up in such a way that the V actually then satisfies this equation down here, okay? You notice, of course, the only difference is here that you pick up a certain number beta here, and here you have a gradient.x term, which has to do with the scaling, okay? So let's look at the stationary solutions. They are the Barenblatt-type solutions, and these are now, remember, I wrote here V, right? The U doesn't have any stationary, the equation for the U does not have any stationary solutions, but this one has, and these are the stationary functions, the so-called Barenblatt profiles. And you see, again, it's a constant plus x squared to some power, okay? Now, the parameter d of m you choose here in order to fix the mass of the steady state, yeah? You can calculate it quite easily. This is, again, some constant which you can express in terms of gamma functions, okay? So at this moment, let's review a little bit properties of the solutions. The range of mass conservation, so that depends, of course, on the M, right? And that has been established, I think, by Herrera and Pierre in 1985. So you take 1 minus 2 divided by the dimension. That's D, by the way, in my case, is greater or equals 3. So this is a strictly positive number, right? And M has to be between 1 minus 2D and 1, strictly. Then you have mass conservation. I mean, for all types, right? And Bonforte and Vasquez showed that positive solutions are instantly C infinity. In a way, this equation is better behaved than even the heat equation, right? Because the diffusion is very, very fast, so immediately you lift off. Right? And if the initial condition is asymptotically a Barenblatt profile, so in other words, you simply ask yourself, well, how does this thing have to look in infinity? Well, it has to look like x to the minus 2 over 1 minus m. So assume that this is true for certain x greater than r. It's a supremum for x greater than r, for some r. Then you know that for any time, t star, whatever you pick, positive, you find some constant, maybe huge, so that you get that v and v infinity are roughly the same. Right? In other words, bounded above by a constant, bounded below by a strictly positive constant. I think that goes again to Bonforte, belongs again to Bonforte and Vasquez from 2006. Sorry? Yeah. For all t greater than t star. Yeah. Okay? Yeah, I should have said that. Yeah. So you pick the f, that's your initial condition, huh? And then you pick your t star, and then you find a constant depending on t star and of course the initial condition, right? Yeah. Okay. So then you know this such an estimate, right? But the point which I'm using here is that as soon as the time is positive, right, I have such a bound. I mean, all these results are non-trivial. I don't want to sort of talk about this, how one gets those. So let me just reiterate what we have. We have the sharp Hardy-Lewis-Zobel inequality, which I'm going to look in the form of this functional f, that this is positive, and it's optimized by these functions h, always 1 over 1 plus x squared to some power. We have the sharp Galliard-Nirenberg inequality, which is again optimized in terms of a function h tilde this time, again a function of 1 over 1 plus x to some power. And we have the fast diffusion equation in the Fokker-Planck type form that has again a function, a stationary function, which is of the form 1 over 1 plus x squared to some power, right? And of course, needless to say, we should also say that, I forgot to say this before, that that this v of x, this v of x and t actually converges in L1 norm to the function v infinity of m. I forgot to write this down. In fact, it converges even better than that. You can also take certain p norms. I forgot what the limit is to certain p norms for which it still converges. Okay. So in other words, what you're doing is you take your fast diffusion equation. You start with your initial conditions. You let it run, and eventually it looks like 1 over 1 plus x squared to some power. Even that, it's right. So it's massive, right? It's a very very strong convergence. Okay. So that gets you to the idea that maybe you can find a relation between the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev and the fast diffusion. And this is the content of the first theorem here. So you start out with a function in L to the power 2d over d plus 2. This is exactly the right power for the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev, right? Okay. And you assume it's non-negative, and here we have to assume that's sort of technical, but you can easily get rid of it, that this function is asymptotically Baron-Plott, right? So, of course, you need this in order to understand what the fast diffusion equation is going to do to this function, okay? So we also assume that we rescale the function in such a way that the integral of f of x is the same as the integral h of x, which, remember, the h of x is the optimized in the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev inequality, okay? Good. And particularly the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev inequality with d minus 2, right? So it's a function. So again, the h is the function which gives you equality in this f. F of h is equals to 0, okay? All right, here it is. Now what you do is, it's quite naive what one does, right? All you do is you take now, you differentiate the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev functional along the flow. And you keep your fingers crossed and you hope that you get something reasonable, right? And what you get is, first of all, you get minus sign here, 2d, another functional, which you can write especially nicely in terms of u to the d minus 1 over d plus 2 as a function of t. This is, by the way, I wrote it, this is less or equal 0. But of course the question is, why is this less or equal 0? Well, this functional is given here. Looks a little bit complicated. Huh? So you have some constant here, and then you get some funny p norms, gradients, L2 norm squared, and so on, right? However, when you sort of stare at this for the moment, I mean, what's there? It's a gradient, it's a certain p norm for the g, and another p norm of the g. Of course, if there is any justice to this expression, it must be what? It must be the Galliard and Nirenberg expression. I mean, there's nothing else around, right? Yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely correct, right? And what, of course, is when you said p equals d plus 1 over d minus 1, this is exactly this expression, the sharp Galliard and Nirenberg. So in other words, what this tells you is that you can actually get the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev, the special case, is a consequence of the Sharpe-Galliard and the Nirenberg inequality, right? Which is, by the way, interesting because the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev inequality concerning the existence of optimizers is a tough problem. In this respect, Galliard and Nirenberg is easier. It's much easier. I mean, it's not easy to find out where all the optimizers are. There you have to do some work, right? But the existence theorem for the optimizers is easier. Yeah, you need that, exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, this D wouldn't be positive, right? Exactly, right? Okay. And you see, I just wrote down, turns out that this sharp constant in Galilean with Sobolev is exactly given by that, which we would remember, right? The CS is the sharp constant in the Hardy Littlewood Sobolev. And this is exactly this combination which shows up here. Okay, and you see also, by the way, of course, very natural. This is, of course, the way you guess this whole thing, right? You say, well, this guy is equal to that, right? You know, now with this P up there, and you can also fudge the M, you immediately get that you get that this function is equal to that function to the power D minus 1 over D plus 2, and that's, of course, exactly what you have to have, right? It's what we had before. This is the way how you express everything here, you see? U to the D minus 1 over D plus 2. Okay? So this is the first little theorem, and here's the second one. Of course, that's the proof of the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev now, right? Namely, what do you do? You have to use the fact that when you take the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev functional and you plug in the solution at time t, when you let t go to zero, that you actually converge to the initial condition. That's not hard, that's easy to do. So what this theorem says is, if you start out again with the Barenblatt profile, you can integrate the previous differential inequality, and you get that the f of f is equal to this expression. Of course, what this entails is the following. At infinity, at time t equals infinity, what you have to know, of course, is that this quantity here is zero, but it is because it's going to be the optimizer of the Galeardo-Nierenberg-Sobolev inequality, right? So that's equal to zero, right? So you get this integral expression for the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev function. And you see, by the way, what is interesting about this, and this was our original motivation, although we didn't really make much progress, what you find is you have a correction term in some sense, right? If you understand this term better, you could maybe understand something about the stability of this Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev functional, but we haven't really succeeded yet. Okay? Good. So this is easy. And the proof, of course, is clear, right? You just integrate the previous differential inequality, but you have to be careful a little bit to take care of the right initial conditions, what happens asymptotically at infinity, and so on. Okay? But it's not a big deal. So what I find interesting here is that we have an entirely natural flow proof for one of the relatively hard inequalities in analysis, right? The Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev inequality. Now, when you think in terms of the Galeardo-Nierenberg inequalities, there is also flow proof around. And that's basically due to, let's see what to Toscani and Carrillo. And let me just state this. You can look at the fast diffusion equations, I think you know this even much better than I do, most of you, as a gradient flow of the functional, which I just have written up here, h of v, with respect to the Euclidean Wasserstein distance. That's an observation of Otto from 2001. And what you do is you just differentiate it, and that expression you call I of v. And then what you do, well, if you have differentiated something, you might as well do it twice, right? So you differentiate this once more. And that's what Carrillo and Toscani did. And what they were able to show was that when you differentiate the I functional, you get minus twice the I back, but you get an additional term. And this additional term turns out to be negative. That's not hard to see. By the way, although they don't really say this, what this is what one is called a Bakri-Emery type argument, right? Bakri-Emery, this was their famous proof of the logarithmic Sobolev inequalities, exactly goes that way. Here, of course, it's much more complicated, okay? So in any case, what you see, it turns out that the remaining term for our choice of M, everything is fine, is negative because you have a minus sign, right? And here's the key. So you have this inequality down here, which of course everybody knows how to integrate. And when you do that, you get that the derivative of the h functional is greater or equal to 1/2 the derivative of the I functional. You know that the limits of these two functionals is zero, right? That's the stationary state of our entropy functional. And one gets the inequality here, which I've written down here. When you rearrange the terms, you notice here you have, for example, here you have a square, right? You can, of course, multiply this out. You have x dot grad, you integrate by parts, etc., etc. You do all of this. Once you're done, what stares at you is just the Galliard and the Inberg-Sobolev inequality. Okay? I understand what I'm telling you here is a little bit half-baked, right? I mean, you get something. But the question, of course, is what really makes this whole thing tick, right? I mean, the calculations work out. Everything is beautiful. Nowadays, we have entirely, in other words, we have only flow proofs. We don't need anything else, right? Now, what's the nice thing about the flow proof? The nice thing about the flow proof is that it tells you something about the landscape of the Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev functional, right? You see, if all the previous proofs, they told you only there's an optimizer. They told you what the optimizers are. But couldn't that be somehow local? Maxima, these sorts of things. The flow proof tells you actually there isn't. There aren't any, right? Okay, cannot happen. You cannot go up anywhere. You always have to go down, okay? So that's nice to know. I also want to mention that it also works for the logarithmic Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev inequality, but that's a bit more complicated. And the reason why it's more complicated is that the preservation of the mass, you see, becomes suddenly an issue because 1 minus 2 over d is equals to 0. And when m is too small, I don't remember what the number was, there's a certain critical number when you go below that, then you have a problem, right? And I think this was resolved. Do you remember? There were some people from Vienna, they were able to resolve it. Yeah, Markovic and so on, these ones, okay. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think that's right, yeah. And that's what you have to use in order to work with the two-dimensional logarithmic Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev because you have exactly this issue. But this works out. Now, let me finally mention that this Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev function is conformal invariant. But you do not see anything this in the Galliard and Nierenberg inequality. It's not conformal invariant. I mean, not that I can see. So, what's going on? You see, I can sort of change conformally the initial condition. Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev doesn't see it. The D functional sees it. D functional changes dramatically. Nevertheless, when you integrate it along the flow, you get the same result. I must say this baffles me. I don't really understand it. Right? Now, you can also say, aha, but up here, by the way, your Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev were a very special one. Namely, the lambda had to be d minus 2. What happens for general lambda? It turns out you can look at the problem which has to do with flows, fast diffusion flows, but with a local operator. So it's not anymore the Laplacian, right? It's minus Laplacian to some power. So first of all, we have to study this. And secondly, the corresponding Galliard and Nierenberg inequalities which come out, they are there. You know they exist, but we have no clue for the moment what the optimizers possible. I mean, we also know what the optimizers are, I mean, because you stick them in and they solve the Euler-Lagrange equation. But the way they are the maximizers, we have no clue. Okay. So thank you very much for your attention. This was sort of a little overview of what we have been doing. I hope we will make some better progress than this. Okay. Thanks.